Welcome into the Sports
Hello.
Objective here, and we have a great show, a lot of great time with a great coach from the past, not only for East Carolina, went on to be at Ball State College, right, Bubba?
Absolutely, Dave. Remember this guy well from his time in Greenville, 1989 to 1996, on the staffs of Bill Lewis as well as Steve Logan. Welcome into the show, Coach Jags. Coach, how are you?
Great, guys. Thanks for having me.
We've had a lot of fun with you in the green room behind the scenes. Now we're live with you, and so great to have you. I know that you were talking about your fond memories of Greenville. I guess we could start that way. Tell us about what's it like being a coach at East Carolina University?
Well, I mentioned it just a little bit before. As far as learning how to coach and developing as a coach, I developed there more than any place I've ever been. And I've been real fortunate to have been at some really, really good places like LSU. And after LSU, I came to Greenville. And I remember when I got the job, Bill Lewis was the coach at the D coordinator at Georgia. And Bill got the job. And I was sitting back in the GA room underneath the stadium, Tiger Stadium. And one of the coaches came up and goes, "Hey, I talked to Bill Lewis about going to coach at East Carolina." And I said, "Where is East Carolina?" He goes, "Well, it's in Greenville." So I remember going up to the lobby and go, "Greenville." I go, "Okay, now there's a Greenville, North Carolina, there's a Greenville, South Carolina. Which one is it?" And so I remember I had my flight to go to the interview was Baton Rouge to Atlanta to Charlotte to Greenville. I remember those commuter planes, right? And I remember the first time I ever flew into Greenville, I go, "Holy smokes." I go, "Where am I?" But it turned out to be one of the best stops of my career. And it was just the kids were great. The administration was great. And I got a chance to coach with a lot of great football coaches. A lot of good ones. And we were talking Bubba before, and we had a bunch of NFL coordinators and a bunch of head coaches on that staff in Greenville. And we never knew. We were just a bunch of young guys and just trying to do our best. But who knew how many guys were going to be coordinators in the NFL? And yeah, Chuck becoming a head coach at the Colts. So.
Yeah, that initial staff that Coach Lewis assembled, like you're saying, you know, whether it was NFL head coaches or coordinators, but then also, you know, college head coaches. And you mentioned Mark Richt. You had Ron Cooper, who went on to be a head coach at Louisville and what, also Eastern Michigan, I believe.
Yep.
And you had Coach Shank. Obviously, Coach Shank has been a tremendous offensive line coach as well as a OC in spots.
Right, forever.
And I mean, just so many coaches on that staff. I'm trying to recall. And Chuck Pagano, like you mentioned,
Bobby Slowick was on it. He was the defensive coordinator with the Bears too.
Unbelievable.
Bob Babich was on there. He was on Logan's staff, but yeah, we had just a bunch of guys.
And then I want to say it was maybe, I don't know if it's SB Nation or one of the websites out there and that's pretty popular, and did an article and just talking about that staff.
Yeah. And again, we didn't know. We were just a bunch of young guys, you know, probably mid-20s. Who would have known?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And, you know, Coach, it's a natural time to have you on the program because East Carolina and Boston College, two programs that you're so familiar with, are meeting for the first time on December 27th up in Annapolis, Maryland at the Military Bowl. You know, so we'll talk about that here in a few minutes, but just – take us back to you talk about how you got to Greenville from LSU as a GA. Just talk about those early years there in Greenville on that tremendous staff, even though you didn't necessarily know it at the time. But talk about working with, you know, the likes of Steve Logan, Mark Richt, and obviously Coach Lewis as the head coach.
Yeah, Bill was really, really, really great. He was really a good football coach, and he came along to East Carolina at the perfect time. You know, he brought a little bit of the Vince Dooley attitude and the way things are done in the SEC, and Bill did a great job. I remember my first time I had the interview, told you guys about the interview, and I came back to start work, and I flew into Kinston driving into Greenville, and they gave me a car, and they said, hey, you're recruiting. And your first recruiting trip, I was in Apex, North Carolina. I go, okay, where is that? I don't know. Because back, you know, there's no GPS. So everyone, you had to have maps, right? So you had to go to the, you had to go to the store, and you had to circle all the schools. And I had no idea. I never recruited before, because I was GI. I didn't recruit at LSU. So this was my first time recruiting. And that was an adventure. And being up, I was up in the Raleigh area, and I had no idea where I even was, you know, like I said, and everything was a roadmap. There was no GPS or anything back in the day. There was no phones. You had to go stop on the side of the road, and I don't know, it was a quarter, a dime you stuck in there to make a phone call. You couldn't get a hold of anybody. So that was fun. That was the first.
Coach, as we, you know, look ahead to your time. My connection or y'all's connection? I just lost you. But as we look ahead a little bit to your time in Greenville, fast forward to the 91 season, the Peach Bowl year. Obviously, everybody remembers that, as we're coming up here on the 30th anniversary of that here in a few weeks. At what point during the 91 season, was it spring ball? Was it the start of fall camp? Or was it early in the year? At what point did you guys, as a staff, realize you had a special football team and could be really good?
I think in the spring, because it was Bill's, I think, third year there. And a lot of the guys had, you know, cycled through. We had some really good players too, though, right? Jeff Blake, and we had Robert Jones, but we had a bunch of really good football players too on that team. But I think we knew in the spring that we were going to make a move. I don't, Bubba, you might know the records of those first 2 years, like in 89 or 90, but I think they were like,
yes, sir. We had won 5 games in each of those seasons. Right. Like 5-6 and 5-5-1.
Right. Right. And then, you know, and then we started probably in that spring, and then we had that really close game against Illinois. We were talking about before the show started, and we went up to Illinois, and we were talking about the Miami rule back then, you know, the Miami celebrations, they got out of hand. So they had a thing called the Miami rule. So we're playing up at Illinois, and we kick an onside kick and recovered the kick. And we got flagged for unsportsmanlike kind of the Miami rule. That was the first time it was ever called. And that wasn't the purpose of that rule. And I remember we had that, and we ended up losing that game. And then we ended up winning, you know, 10 straight. And, you know, it's cliche. Cliches are used because they're true. But like that one game at a time thing. And we just kept winning and winning and winning and winning. And I think we won 10 in a row. And then we ended up getting a chance to go, you know, to that Peach Bowl year. But we had some really good football players on that football team. Really good.
After that near miss at Illinois that you just referenced in heartbreaking fashion, where we had rallied from down 38-10 that next week against Memphis State, as they were at the time. They had just defeated USC out of the Coliseum. You probably recall that. And then you know, they came in. Man, was that game a dogfight. And I'm sure you recall this as well, since you were, I guess, working with tight ends at the time.
Yep.
But, we kept running the same play over and over to put that one away. I think we won something like 20-13.
Yeah, I tell you exactly what we did. We ran the outside zone over and over and over, because the D coordinator there, his name was Joe Lee Dunn. And Joe Lee was a really well-known defensive coordinator, you know, back in the day. And he was at, like, every Mississippi school, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, Ole Miss, but he ran this really aggressive blitzing style defense. And we just kept running that same play, and he could never fit the gaps. And we were able to run the football out of that game. But I, you know what? I remember that game. Now that you say it.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously some other special moments in that 91 season. We go on the road. I don't know what point in the season that was. We beat South Carolina, which was a big moment. You know, the goalpost came down to Dowdy Ficklin. And then the Pirates go on the road to Syracuse and knock off the Orangemen for the program's first ever win over a top 25 opponent. Do you remember that? And do you remember what the airport was like when the team got back to Greenville after that Syracuse game.
You know, that's one of that's one of my fondest memories is when we would come home from on the road wins at the airport, and that airport was packed. It was the greatest feeling. I mean, you come in there, the crowd, they were all cheering, and there was like standing room only. You could hardly get through the crowd. But I remember, I remember that. Those were a lot of fun. And I remember, like, the first time it happened, we didn't even know that there was going to be that type of crowd at the airport. And then we started winning, and it started winning even the years after that. There'd be people at the airport, and that was always really cool.
Yeah, no doubt. And it would be remiss if you're going to talk about the 91 season, you know, obviously the Peach Bowl. But to me, the game that stands out even more so than the Peach Bowl is the Pitt game where Blake goes for two and you know, the Pirates win it there. It towards the end of the game, wasn't the last play of the game. Pittsburgh actually had an offensive possession after that. But what do you remember about that game, the Pittsburgh game where, you know, going for two and all that, just the atmosphere at Dottie Ficklin that day?
Well, you know, Kyle, we were talking about that game before in the green room. And so they had some really, really good players on the Pitt defensive line. I forget their names, but they were like two defensive tackles, and they were like first-round picks. And so I think Coach Hackett was the head coach at Pitt at the time. But I was telling the story. It was during the week, and I came in one morning, and I said, "Hey, Logan," I said, "I had a dream last night. We won this game on a two-point conversion." He goes, "Really?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, we probably should have a couple of plays ready to go." and that's exactly how it ended. We bring it up all the time and we laugh about it. And I don't know why, but I said, we won the game on a 2-point play. And I dreamt about it that week during the season. And we put it in and we had two plays. We had it was a certain front. And the front that we got, we were going to run the option. And that was the option. Blake dove in, I think, going to the right. And that's how that whole thing came about. Because I had a dream about it, and I said, we probably should have a 2-point play at the end.
I was going to ask Coach Follow, has there been any other games since at East Carolina or anywhere else where you had premonitions that came true?
No, you know what? It sounds really funny, but that's exactly what happened, though. And hopefully you guys can have Logan on your show, and he can talk about it. But no, I've never had another one of those. But that one was like as real as could be.
Well, I'm glad you had that one. I'm glad you had that dream and that premonition. And I'm glad that not only that, but the fact that it gave Coach Logan time to prepare. You don't need to give Logan any time to prepare for a game, right?
No, that's true. That's true. He's probably one of the best football coaches I've ever been around. He's a really, really good one. Really good. Good teacher. He's probably the best teacher. And we would call it, especially, you know, at East Carolina, we'd call it country coach. He goes, "Let's not make this thing hard." And he goes, "We'll throw some country coaching on these kids." And that's what we did. And, you know, if you just hear Logan's, that's his expression, you know, and you go, "Yep. That's what it was." And the thing is with him, if we go out on the field and we would try different things, and he would call it the lab, because we're going out to the lab today and we're going to throw it on the grass and see what it looks like. And if it doesn't look any good, we'll take it out. If it works, we'll keep it in. But he was not afraid to try new things at all. And, you know, when we went into that last game, we went into we were down in the Peach Bowl against NC State, and we went to empty formation, five wides, and just started throwing the ball over the place and ended up beating NC State kind of pretty handily at the end there. But they couldn't stop. They couldn't stop five wide. We never showed it before. And that's the type of thing. No one was doing that. Back in the early 90s, nobody was in empty. Nobody did. And we just decided to do it, and it worked.
Coach, one of the things I want to ask you as far as the Peach Bowl season, how the kids, obviously the players handled it very well, but what was it like in the locker room? Did you guys as coaches or players feel the pressure? I mean, it's really difficult to win a game. People don't realize, if you've never played or coached, how difficult it is to win a game. But the fact that you guys won 11 in a row is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's hard to do. It's hard to do. So, like, when we won 10, our 10th game, or actually it was the night before our 10th game, Bill Lewis, his wife Sandy was just awesome. And so what they did, they gave each kid a shiny dime, and Sandy polished them in her sink. And they gave each kid a dime. Because you're going to remember this one, because winning 10 games is really special. And it's hard. It's hard to do. And so we handed out those dimes to every kid before the night before the game. And I go, you keep this one, yeah, because this is one's going to really mean something. And I took that same thing when I was up at BC, my first year at BC, we won 11 games. And our 10th game, I did the same thing, is took that dime in there. But I heard a comment this past weekend. It was Kirby Smart made it. And he said, you know, pressure is a privilege. And I thought that was really profound. You want that. There's no pressure when there's nothing to win or lose, right? But when you have pressure because you want to keep winning and go undefeated, that's pressure. And pressure is a privilege. And I'm
yeah.
gonna use that one. I'm gonna steal it, actually. No, I made that up.
that is very true. Even as a fan, I you know, back, you know, the last few years under Scotty Montgomery and the first couple of years under Coach Houston, we were losing consistently. So, you know, you didn't even worry about the next game. And then when you start winning and you're trying to get bowl eligible, you stress yourself to death wondering if we're going to win the game because all of a sudden it matters.
Yep. Yep. But, you know, the thing is, the only time you get a chance to play in big games is when you're doing something big to get into them. You know what I mean? So that was always – that was – those games are the best. And there's nothing like having a team, especially on the road, after a big win in a locker room. Nothing like that. You can't. I wish I could produce it, the feeling that you have, because it happens rarely. You know, when you have that type of team, like the East Carolina team back then, when you're winning all those games and you win those big games on the road and the locker room, and all of a sudden you come home and the airport's packed and you can't even walk into the airport because there's so many people. So that's a really cool thing. That's really a cool part of coaching, being able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And this year, this current East Carolina team got to experience that a couple of times with getting win number 6 at Memphis in overtime, and then beating Navy the following weekend on a 54-yard field goal. And they got to experience the joys of winning a big game on the road and coming back home to some people in the airport. And speaking of big games, there's a big one at December 27th in Annapolis, Maryland, between East Carolina and Boston College, and that's kind of where we had you on. As you know, everybody remembers you at East Carolina, but everybody also remembers you were the head coach at BC. You had a lot of success there. You had Coach Logan as your offensive coordinator. You had Matt Ryan at quarterback. And also another quarterback you had that people may not realize is another former Pirate, a more Boston College East Carolina connections, with Dominique Davis. What do you remember about Dom?
Old Dom. So I just got the job at BC, and I only had two quarterbacks. I had Matt Ryan and a kid that was a junior, Chris Crane. There's only two quarterbacks on our roster. And I told Logan, I said, we need to have more quarterbacks. We got to go ahead and sign a couple kids. And we went down to Tampa, Florida. And there's a right outside of Tampa, it's Kathleen, Florida. And it's Kathleen High School. And that's where Dominique was from. And we walked in there and he's 6'3", right? Good tall kid, but 170 pounds. And Logan goes, Jags, did you see if he turned sideways, he'd look like a zipper. I go, I know. I know he's really thin. and then we worked him out. We weren't supposed to work out. You're not supposed to work out kids, you know, but we did anyway. And Logan played catch with the kid and goes, I think this kid can play. I think he'll be okay. So that's how we took Dominique Davis. And he ended up coming into our program up there, and our quarterback got hurt as a redshirt freshman, and he went in there and ended up winning ACC division championship with Dominique. And it's unfortunate what happened to him. He got in a little bit of academic problems up there, and then it turned out great for East Carolina because he went down there and he lit it up. But
Go ahead, Bubba.
I'm sorry?
That wasn't me, Kyle. That was Coach.
Oh, go ahead, Coach. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you.
No, that's okay. But he was Tom's a good player.
Were you surprised or just the irony of all the places he could transfer to? He ended up at East Carolina with y'all's ties to UCU. I mean, he said Logan or you it had nothing to do with him coming to East Carolina. That was all Coach Holtz. And then when Holtz left and he met Lincoln Riley and Ruffin McNeil for the first time, and Lincoln said, hey, this is what we're going to run. He said, no, I'm still coming.
Well, you know, I mean, he went down to Blinn, right, down in Texas. Is that right?
It is. It is. He had played for whoever, Blinn or he had played against Cam Newton in the JUCO national title game.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I think
maybe Cam Newton was Blinn, but whatever. Yeah. They squared off against each other in the national title game.
But, you know, Dom stepped into a good system too. Very quarterback friendly system with Lincoln's deal. You know, obviously he's had a lot of success. And when Lincoln was in Greenville, you know, Dom fit perfectly for what he wanted to do, you know, because Dom could throw it now. He could really throw the football, spin it really, really well. And it turned out to be a great fit for him. And, you know, then Dom ends up going to the Falcons and ends up being Matt Ryan's backup for a little bit. It's like, just what a small world, right?
And it was Fort Scott for Dom.
Okay. Okay. See, I thought it was Blinn. But I know he had a good career there. And but, no, we had nothing to do with him going to East Carolina.
Just one of those ironic things.
It is very ironic. But he's a good good kid.
Coach, if you don't mind elaborating on it, how you left BC and the whole situation surrounding that seemed to be kind of odd. Is that something you want to talk about?
Well, it was odd, and it was really unfortunate. It's the thing is, for me, it was an opportunity to go interview for one of the top jobs in my profession. There's only 32 of those, and I had an opportunity to go interview with the Jets, and it was really weird because I haven't seen it happen since where a guy gets fired for going on an interview. I haven't seen that since. And the thing is, it wasn't like we weren't winning games. I mean, we won more games at BC than they had won since the 1942, 1943. They didn't win games. And we had a number two ranking in the country. And it was just all I always thought that an interview was a conversation. And I don't know, rather it turned personal rather than business. And it was unfortunate. Because I think we could have still won there because Dominique would have been my quarterback. He's been my quarterback for the next 3 years there. So I knew wow. We were going to win. I knew we were going to win because I had a quarterback. And anyway, it was just unfortunate. It was unfortunate. I think if I were to do it over again, hindsight's 20/20, I wouldn't have done it. But I did it, and you know. That's about really, that's all that's to it. There was really nothing more to it than that. It was just, he goes, you go on an interview, you're getting fired. I'm going, we just won two championships. Or we just won an ACC championship. I'm going, I'm going to get fired for going talking to somebody. And that wasn't the only one. I had a couple other college ones. Tommy Tuberville was leaving Auburn, had a chance to go down there to talk to them. I wasn't even interested. First of all, my name doesn't fit in Auburn, Alabama. My last name.
Coach, they love to win though down there, my friend.
I know they do. I know they do. But we would have continued to win at BC at a really high level. And I learned how to be a head coach from Steve Logan. That's really my blueprint was like how Logan ran the East Carolina program. That's the way I ran the BC program with that.
Yeah, I remember
that type of mentality, you know. Again, we're talking about country coaching. You don't have to be complicated to be good. And just the way that he ran like day-to-day operations, Steve helped me a lot as a head coach there, a lot. But it was just unfortunate, you know. The thing is, they've never won seven games in the last 15 years. So, but hey, moving forward, right?
That's right.
I remember when that went down and hearing about it and kind of being exactly like you're saying and thinking, what an odd thing to fire a coach for interviewing for a job. And hopefully, Coach, we can keep them from even winning 7 this year. Forget 7. We want them to stay at 6. So
I believe you do too. I believe you do too. I'm sure it'll be. I to tell you one thing about the kids at BC, they're smart kids, and they're physical. That's the trademark that they've always had for that. Those football teams up there, and that offensive line will be good. It'll be really good. You know, so I don't know how you're going to match up on that. You're probably going to have way more speed than BC has, I would think. But I'm looking forward to seeing the matchup. That'll be a fun game to watch because I have a vested interest now, you know, in seeing both of them. So like, a lot of my kids were born in Greenville. I had 3 of them born in Greenville.
Wow.
And yeah, at Pitt County. So, you know, yeah, there's just a lot of great memories from that place.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about.
Go ahead, Dave.
My question is, as far as Boston College is concerned, with we know the academics are things. You talked about East Carolina's where you cut your teeth in recruiting. How much harder is it to coach at an academic school like a Boston College versus East Carolina?
Well, your pool of kids is different, right? And things like East Carolina. So if you guys would say, who does East Carolina need to beat in recruiting? Who would that be?
North Carolina, right
now? Yeah, like
right now. I mean,
yeah. If you're trying to beat somebody, who do you have to beat?
Well, we tend to run into Appalachian State a lot these days. Some NC State, some Wake Forest. We will run into some other American Conference schools. Cincinnati, not so much here recently with Cincinnati, unfortunately. UCF, South Florida, and Marshall is always somebody we run into recruiting.
Right. So, and like a lot of those schools are real similar academically, right? Marshall, East Carolina, probably Appy State, pretty similar. Well, it's same thing kind of happens at BC, but it's Northwestern, Virginia, Wake Forest, Stanford. So that's the type of kid that you get. Now they're not all rocket scientists up there now. They're not, but just the academics are just a little bit higher to get in for the entrance, you know, but, and the kids had to take, I remember kids had to have, if he was like a borderline kid, he had to have an interview with the head of admissions. And he decided if that kid could make it or not. And one of the questions, and we would try to coach the kids up, you know, had to have wear a shirt and tie to go see this guy. And they're going to ask you what's the last book you read, and you need to explain it. So, I mean, you had to be able to string a sentence together, even if you're like a really good player, you know. So, but that was the difference. That was the difference of it. But recruiting is all about forming a relationship. And I remember Logan learned recruiting from Bill McCartney. I don't know if you remember Bill. He was at Colorado with Bill, and he learned how to recruit from Bill. And then he brought that same philosophy. And the thing that about recruiting is, one, you have to have trust of the player, and then you have to find that kid's champion. That kid's champion could be his mother, his uncle, his grandmother. And if you can get the kid to trust you and win the champion, get the champion, find out who that is, you're going to get the kid. So you spent a lot of time on figuring out who was that kid's champion. It's somebody that he's going to, it could be a coach, it could be the mom, grandma, uncle, you know, never a girlfriend. We never worried about that, but it was usually somebody in their life that they would go to and ask.
Coach, we talked about recruiting, you know, the difference between Boston College and East Carolina. And you mentioned the administration being involved, interviewing kids if they were borderline. What would you say the biggest difference in the two fan bases are? Because that's, you know, never played Boston College. The fan bases are going to meet out in the tailgate lots the day of the Military Bowl. How different are the fan bases? And what would you say the biggest differences are?
I think I would guess that East Carolina travels better. They travel better than BC. I would have had like game day at BC and game day at East Carolina. I would think they're a lot different, lot different. It's just, I remember the East Carolina ones. They were wild. Those damn kids. We'd come in there and they'd be all over the place. I remember the first time we played Bill Lewis's first game, and they had the cars parked on the practice field, and Bill about lost it. He goes, "Why are cars parked on the practice fields?" I mean, that didn't happen at Georgia, right? But I think that East Carolina probably will travel a lot better than BC. We had an opportunity to go to at BC. We lost in the ACC championship game to Virginia Tech 2 years in a row, but the loser of that game was supposed to go to the Chick-fil-A Bowl. And we went to the Hall of Fame Bowl and the Music City Bowl, which was a couple tier bowls down from the Chick-fil-A, because we didn't travel. We didn't travel well. So they didn't take us. So I would think East Carolina travels pretty darn good.
Hey, now, Coach, not to get off on a tangent here, but since you brought up what Coach Lewis said as far as parking cars on the football practice field,
right.
I remember attending Coach Logan's camp there. When you were still there, I guess it was right. The summer of 96, going right. into my freshman year of high school. And you recall where the soccer field was there on what is now the upper deck side of the stadium. They are not too far from Minji's Coliseum. And that soccer field, we did some 7-on-7 and stuff at the camp on that field. And that field was it was not level. It was sloped. I said, this is a Division I soccer field. And you had a scoreboard that you had to get binoculars to be able to see it.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, one of the coolest things was they used to have, and I don't know, it was at 14th Street, and it's right, it was like by the practice field, but there used to be a tobacco warehouse, like right, was that 14th Street? Is that where it is?
Yeah, 14th and Charles. Yeah.
Yeah, it's right, it's like right on there. It used to be, I don't think it's there anymore, but I remember they used to hang tobacco in there. And you could smell it like at practice because they're drying it out. And when they were trying to sell it and they're trying to harvest it and they had the tobacco shack right next to the practice field. I remember that like it was yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. They tore it down, Coach. They put a Rite Aid when Rite Aid went out. Now it's a Dollar General. So
not a Dollar General in Eastern North Carolina, but sure not.
I know. But anyway, you're right about it. In fact, Coach, they were talking about some of our players have come on in the past that have come on that show, talk about working out. Isn't that the weight room they're talking about in the 80s?
Yeah, the guy from the 80s, Terry Gallagher.
The first weight room I had when I came down to visit was a bowling alley. It was a bowling alley that they had the weight room in when I first got to East Carolina.
Wow.
It was an old bowling alley that they got it. Come a long way, haven't they?
Yeah, we have now the Murphy Center. They just spent, Bubba, how much was that? You're the numbers guy, or Kyle, maybe you remember. Was it a couple million on the weights?
For the upgrades? I don't know the numbers, but there was an upgrade. There's a second strength and conditioning facility being built on campus now, thanks to help me out.
Max Joyner family. Max Joyner family. Max Joyner.
No, the boat people.
Oh, Grady White.
Grady White. Yeah, thanks to Grady White,
we're Grady Allison.
A second multi-purpose weight facility. So that'll help. I think that'll pretty much give the football team full access to the Murphy Center, and the rest of the teams, once that'll get built, will use that as their primary weight facility. Which is good, because now the Murphy Center won't have to be shared so much.
Yeah, the Murphys, they've always been big boosters. The largest hog deal in the South or North Carolina?
Is that the same Greg? Is it Greg Murphy?
I mean, the hog farm.
Yeah. Yeah, there's Wendell Murphy for NC State, and then is it Greg Murphy? The big donor for East Carolina, but they're different Murphys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not the same Murphy anyway. Not the same man. So
yeah.
But, yeah, Coach Can you talk about your, you're talking about East Carolina talk. Can you talk about, in addition, we're talking about the Peach Bowl. You were there during two Liberty Bowls, obviously. Can you talk about your time there with Memphis? And I remember Coach Logan, can you help us out on this? But we have memories of Coach Logan playing like the guitar, Johnny B. Good, there at the Liberty Bowl. I think that was that 94, Bubba, the first Liberty Bowl, I think, or was the second Liberty Bowl? I can't remember.
94 was when we lost Illinois, and then 95 was when we beat Stanford.
Yeah, we beat Stanford. That going to the Liberty Bowl was really cool too, because at the time we weren't going to a lot of bowls, right? We went to the Peach Bowl, and then we got a chance to go to Liberty Bowl, I think, back to back. And Memphis was really a cool town. It was a great place for a bowl game. And we had a lot of fun. I remember Logan did a speech. He did a speech for a car dealership, and they gave him, I don't know, like $2,500 or something. So we all went to Tunica, Mississippi, right outside Memphis. And he goes, all right. He goes, so everybody gets money. I'm here. Everyone's going to be able to gamble. And he goes, and you got it. You got to gamble. And we had a guy named Cliff Yoshida on our staff. Yeah. And Cliff was so tight, he kept the money. he wouldn't bet. So he kept the money, pocketed $100. But yes, yeah, Logan was good. I mean, you know, he got up there and you know, playing the guitar, and he loved doing all that stuff. I mean, you know, I don't know if he's still doing his radio show, but his radio show was about guitar, playing football, guitar playing, and
wine
and fishing.
Yeah.
He had a great radio show. But the Liberty Bowl was great because of Memphis. Because it was really doing. I think we stayed at the Peabody, right downtown Memphis. You know where they have the ducks coming down?
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter was like really, really young, and somehow she ended up in the elevator with the ducks. Like she was like 5 or 4. She got in the elevator with the ducks and went back upstairs, and God, we had to go run up there and get her. And it's like, you know, fun stuff.
Coach, what about the when you talk about the Liberty Bowls? And one more question I have for you that comes to mind is that was my era being a student at East Carolina during the early to mid 90s. Can you talk about coaching at East Carolina? We were talking about the Peach Bowl. You talk about all the teams, but being an independent school back then, a Division One, and it was right after you left in 97 that we went to Conference USA. Can you talk about coaching at a school that's independent versus in a conference?
Well, I think when you're in a conference, usually you have 8 teams, 8 to 12, something like that. And your schedule is going to be set every year. And the thing is, when you're an independent, you have to find teams to play. And I think sometimes at a place like East Carolina, you'll get stuck playing more than like 2 money games. Usually you get like 2 money games, like at East Carolina, right? Where you're getting paid $1 million to go play a game. Right. Well, sometimes, you know, at East Carolina or places like East Carolina, you'll get maybe 3 or 4 of those. Like you'll play Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Miami. I mean, remember playing all those big schools, you know, and I mean, we didn't care about it. But, you know, a lot of times you don't even recruit the same type of players that East Carolina would recruit. Right. But I mean, and we just found a way to win games, though. But that's a big difference between being in a conference and being an independent.
Coach, I have another follow-up to that. I remember Coach Logan saying one time, I was behind the scenes of his radio show in the 90s, and I'll never forget, I think it was there or somewhere I heard Coach say, he said, when we first came to East Carolina, he's talking about you and the different coaches, he said we were playing like 9 homecoming games, 9 homecoming games when we first started East Carolina. I wanted to get you to expound on that.
Just what I just got done saying. You know, when you get put on a homecoming list, it's because so you can win the game, right? So, you know, a lot of those teams that we played, I mean, they were just big time schools, you know, and we weren't maybe at that talent level at the time. But I'll tell you this, it got to the point where nobody wanted to have East Carolina on their schedule. It got to that point. And it wasn't like that in the beginning. But once we got it really rolling, teams didn't want to play us. South Carolina was stuck playing us. Our guys could not wait to get down there. They couldn't get down there fast enough to go to Columbia. And here, like the 2001 Space Odyssey and all that, and playing at Bryce Stadium at night. And man, our guys could not wait to get down to South Carolina to play them.
And like you said, in the 90s, we won 4 out of 5 in Columbia. We beat them down there in 92, 94, 96, and 99. And in 99, obviously you were gone at that time, but Coach Logan, of course, was still around. And that was Lou Holtz's first home game, because I remember Coach was speaking at a Pirate Club function in Winston-Salem or Greensboro, and he was joking, you know, just making the typical comments to fire up the fans. And he said, you know, that will be the first home game for King Kong or whoever the H-E-L-L they hired down there.
I tell you one thing, he didn't care. He didn't care. He didn't care where you played, Coach, when you played, who you played. I think this was
in the green room. So just, you alluded to it a moment ago, as far as the recruiting, just talk about, you know, guys like Lamont Burns and just the knack that staff had for identifying guys and developing them, guys that really nobody else wanted in a lot of cases, and definitely not to play the position they ended up playing at ECU.
And there was a lot of guys like that. I think the thing about, I think, at a place, and fans get all caught up in the star rankings and, well, this kid's a 3-star, this kid's a 4-star. And we never worried about that. We didn't care who recruited them, because we just recruited them to fit our needs and what we thought the kid could do. So we never worried about, hey, who else is recruiting them? In fact, if don't even bring that up, because if you were to go, well, who else is recruiting them? Someone will say, and Logan goes, does it really matter who else is recruiting them? I go, it matters what we think. I said, you know what? And have your own evaluation. Just because somebody else validates a kid doesn't mean that it's a good fit for us. And I think a lot of times the fan base is that they get caught up and go, well, we didn't get this kid. Well, maybe that kid didn't fit for what we wanted or what we needed, right? So we would go ahead and look for frames. We would look for kids that are a little bit taller. Though the Hart twins don't fit into that category, but Lamont Burns was a kid from Greensboro. I think Bubba, you had mentioned it, but he's from Greensboro, and Logan was at the game and watched this kid run down the field, and he goes, who's that kid? And it was Lamont Burns at 6'4", about 220 pounds, being the first guy down on kickoff. He goes, well, let's give that kid a scholarship. And that was about it on the evaluation of it. But, you know, again, it doesn't have to be hard, you know. And we weren't going to get the 5-star guy. We were getting the 4-star guy there. We just weren't. But we tried finding a space for him. They put him on defensive end, defensive tackle, linebacker. We couldn't find a spot for him. And, well, you know, the last stop before the bus stop is the offensive line, right? So as soon as we got him and we tried developing him, and he ended up getting drafted in the 5th round by the New York Jets. So it's just a matter of developing your guys and having confidence on the blueprint you're trying to get done.
A few minutes ago, you told the recruiting story about Dom Davis. So if you would, just talk about Coach Logan. Share a story or two if you can. It's okay to mention on the air. Give us a glimpse behind the scenes back there in the 90s.
Okay, let me think.
We'll get the sensor ready, right, Bubba? Get
no, ready no, to bleep no, 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 nothing like that. I tell you, this is, and nobody would know this one, but we were driving in Norfolk, Virginia, in Tidewater. Tidewater used to be Tidewater still a pretty good recruiting spot for East Carolina? Because Tidewater was big, and that was my area. And we were driving, and Logan had 2 messages and in the car, and one was from Boston College and one was from Baylor. And no one knows this but him and I. And he turned down 2 jobs. He turned down the Baylor job, and he turned down the Boston College job. We were driving in the car. He goes, nope, because I'm building something really special here. He was going to leave. he was not going to leave East Carolina. And it wasn't the money. Memphis offered him a lot of money to go there when we were at the Liberty Bowl. They wanted him. So he had a bunch of opportunities. So when we were on the road recruiting and we do that, Steve was just really straightforward with kids. He wouldn't BS kids at all. And he goes, I could tell you his greatest thing since ice cream, but I go, if you weren't a good player, we wouldn't be sitting here. So let's not waste each other's time. This is what we can offer you. This is what we think we can give to you. This is what we think you can give to us. So, I mean, you kind of got me on the spot there about like stories. There's so many of them. I remember he had a kid in his office from down the road. He was a little running back, and he ended up going to Clemson. But Logan had this thing where he goes, he'd bring a kid in, and he'd have a plus column and a minus column. All right, here's the reasons you want to come to East Carolina. Here's the reasons you don't want to come to East Carolina. So he'd have the kid do that in front of him, and he wouldn't even speak. He just let the kid, and as soon as the kid gave him the list, Logan would just sit there and look at him. He goes, now remember this, Jags. He goes, the first one that speaks loses on this thing. So you don't say anything. And he goes, it's going to get really uncomfortable. And, you know, so you really find out what, you know, if the kid's got interest. One quick story. You guys remember Doug Martin?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He's come on our show.
He's the best. Doug's the best. So Doug got big time by a recruit one time. And he goes, all right, we need to code red this kid. I go, okay, I can do that. So we call, and this was before like caller ID and all that stuff. So he big time Doug, and Doug kind of got pissed off about it. And he goes, all right, he goes, let's code red this kid. And we just did it for being fun because no one likes to be big timed, right? So I called this kid, and like I said, this was before caller ID, and people didn't know. I mean, who are you calling? And I said, well, hey, this is so-and-so from Penn State. I go, we were watching your film. We think you're kind of good. We may or may not even talk to you, or even this might be a one-time phone call for you to the kid. I go, would you be interested in Penn State? And the kid goes, yeah, the kid would be really excited, right? So I don't know. It's probably a stupid thing to do, but that was called a code red. And we go, well, maybe we'll give you an opportunity to – maybe we'll call you again. Maybe we won't. Just kind of hang tight on this one. So we got big time. So we went, we code red at him too. So that's probably a recruiting story.
Now, Coach,
you need to ask Doug about it, but it was just like, he was so mad that some kid big timed him. Right. So we did that. We did it to the kid.
Now, a recruiting story that I heard Coach Logan tell on his radio show, you know, a few years ago, it was pretty funny. And Dwayne Ledford, obviously offensive line coach now with the Atlanta Falcons, but Dwayne was recruited during your years in Greenville.
Yep, and had Dwayne.
According to Coach Logan, he said, you know, he was up there in the mountains of North Carolina recruiting Dwayne, and that he was invited in, or like he went into the wrong house and started to sit down and have supper with someone that he thought was Dwayne's father while Dwayne was still getting home from school.
I could see that. One time we were down in Miami. Steve was with me, and the dad pulled us aside. And he goes, I want you guys to know. He goes, I'm a spy. Both Logan and I look at each other. Go what? He goes. You need to keep this kind of on the hush hush. He goes, but I'm a spy. And he had a little bit something going on. I had no idea what that was, but. You know, you'd get stuff like, there's so many recruiting stories that, like, you guys just wouldn't believe some of the stuff that happens.
Earlier, you talked about your time with the, your interest in that New York Jets job, but we never really dove into your time with the Falcons and the Packers?
Mm-hmm.
So, take us back to those years with the Packers, because I know, was it 2006 that you were the OC there, the year after Aaron Rodgers got drafted in the first round? So one of our loyal viewers, Johnny Gardner, chimed in because I believe it was Aaron Rodgers' record that Don Davis broke when he had the consecutive completions record, 26 in a row or whatever it was, against Navy way back in 2011.
Uh-huh.
So Aaron must have had 24, 25 in a row during his days at Cal.
Yeah, Aaron, I tell you one thing about Aaron, all those guys, Brett and Aaron and Matt Ryan and all those guys were super, super ultra competitive and really, really fierce competitors. Now, when I was with Brett was the quarterback in 06, and I think he was there for another year or two until he left and Aaron took over. But the thing I remember about Aaron is his competitiveness. He was so competitive. And Brett and Aaron really didn't get along really well. They didn't get along really well. I think they wanted, you know, Brett to kind of take Aaron under his wing. And it wasn't that they didn't like each other. It's just Brett didn't want to – he didn't really want to do that. You know, he didn't want to be a mentor to Aaron, you know. And – but the thing I remember most about Aaron is his competitiveness. He's just so super competitive. And it doesn't surprise me. I remember asking Mike McCarthy, I said, how good is he? Because I was gone already. And he goes, he's the best one I've ever had. And he had Joe Montana. He had Brett Favre. He's had a bunch of, you know, Mike's had a bunch of guys. Montana at Kansas City. And he had Brett. And he said, Aaron's the best one I've had. I said, wow. So that's pretty high praise right there.
Now, during your time coaching Brett, obviously Brett had played at Southern Miss, and that overlapped with your time at East Carolina. So did you guys ever discuss that? Did that come up?
Oh, yeah. I remember Brett because Brett got into it. Remember he got into that bad car accident?
Yeah, definitely remember that.
But I remember him playing in Greenville, us playing in Greenville, and him being a quarterback at Southern Miss and how big he was. He was a big guy. You know, Brett was a big guy, and he could throw it so hard. but Brett is again a country kid, but he'd give the shirt off of his back to you, you know. And he'd try to help like guys around him. He made everybody around him better, you know, like on the field. And that's a great quality to have as a quarterback. When he steps in the huddle and he just knows he makes everybody better, and everybody around him knew that he would do that. So, Brett was a super competitor too, but I remember him playing down in Hattiesburg and playing in, you know, in Greenville against him.
Coach, with the NFL going to 17 games, what do you think about that? And obviously one of the things that frustrates me as someone that loves all levels of football, I'm hoping that college football can get their act together like the NFL and have a real college football playoff where every champion's in and some at-larges. But what are your thoughts on the NFL with 17 and maybe the college football playoff?
It's a problem. Are they going to cut down on the preseason games then, Dave? I'm not real sure of the
yeah, down to three. Down I can't three. Think they could. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, talking about like an NFL season, like those guys, I mean, they still got another month, right? Was it just 12 games? They got another month.
Five more games.
Oh man, the season's so long. And I remember getting college kids when they came up, and all of a sudden you get to your 11th game, and they're getting ready to go to a bowl game, and then all of a sudden you've got another 6-7 weeks before you even get to the playoffs. So I remember for a college kid, that would be, you know, he'd hit the wall a lot, you know, as a rookie. That would happen because it's just they're not used to playing that much farther into December, you know, maybe the first week with the playoffs, I think. But I don't know. That's just so many games, but there's so much money out there, Dave, you know, and that's all it's all money driven, you know, and just it's just a lot of games. Just imagine. So there's 17 games, three preseason games, that's 20. And then maybe three playoff games, 23 games. That's playing football half the year.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and those collisions that they get in that league. And there's a reason those guys only last about 3.5 years. Yes. They don't last very long, you know? So I'm surprised that the NFL Players Association said that would be okay. You know, cause they had to sign off on that one.
Oh yeah.
And as far as the college goes, I think they should have at least 8 playoff teams rather than 4. And I'm glad Cincinnati got in. You know, I'm glad they got in. The thing is, if Oklahoma State would have beat Baylor, Cincinnati wouldn't have been in.
I'm like you. I I definitely thought that would be the case as well, Coach. I'm glad we didn't get the chance to find out, you know, that goal line stand by Baylor.
Yep.
Or I guess actually two goal line stands, but.
Right. How about that?
Yeah. That was, I can only imagine that Oklahoma State staff now, you know, getting ready for bowl game after having all those plays inside the 2 yard line and not being able to convert.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyways, well, guys, I'm going to have to cut
this
down now, but it's been an awesome, awesome time talking to you guys, and hopefully you can get Logan on and he can tell you some of his stories, and cause I know he's got a bunch of them, but he loved East Carolina now, and I did too. It was a really cool place. Like I said, I learned how to coach there. Exactly. And I wish you guys the best of luck in your bowl game against BC.
Thank you, Coach, very much. And thanks for the extended time with us in the green room before the show and now on the show. Thank you so much. And love to have you back on again soon. Enjoyed
it. All right, Dave. Good luck, guys. Have a good holiday.
Thank you. All right, you too. All right. All right, Bubba, that was great with Coach Jags, catching up with him, and love to have him back on. And before we get out of here, real quickly, want to remind people of our upcoming content and programming, right?
Yeah, here in a little over 20 minutes, and the Pirates will be taking on North Carolina A&T. So we'll probably have a overtime for you later tonight, and quick look back at that one, hopefully what will be the Pirates' 8th win of the season. 4th in a row, and improved to 7-0 at Minji's. So, you know, obviously it's probably too late tonight unless you live right around the corner. But, you know, moving forward, if you enjoy watching basketball, this is an entertaining team to watch. So definitely get out and check out the Pirates on the hardwood, because it's going to be the best season that we've had in quite some time.
No doubt. By the way, a quick tidbit, quick fact, normally this will be from Bubba, it's for me. Read the notes, pregame notes. They actually, if they win tonight, Bubba, it's the best start since, what, 93-94. I think the record of 7 wins in a row is the most since that season at home.
I believe that's correct. It was the win streak at home. First time they'd won 7 in a row. Going back to that 93-94 season, which was the next to last year of Eddie Payne, the unfortunately late Eddie Payne. What a tremendous coach and an even better man. And one of the things, and that was a shame, when he was pursued by Oregon State and eventually took that job, everything that I've heard from pretty reliable sources was East Carolina didn't really make a counteroffer, and we may not have kept him, but I think Eddie Payne, you know, he played at Wake Forest. He was the guy from this area, and he wanted to stay at East Carolina, but we really didn't counter and attempt to pay him a little bit more. Obviously, we probably wouldn't be able to match what Oregon State was paying with that Pac-8, I guess, or Pac-10 money at the time.
Yeah.
But Eddie Payne, a lot of great memories from his time leading the Pirates.
And I'll quickly say before we got out of here, I mean, that's the guy that took us to the promised land. He took us to the big dance, baby. And I was there at Wake Forest. I think you were too, Bubba, there at Lawrence Joel Coliseum, where we played the Tar Heels and played them a really good game. But we'll have the overtime tonight after the game. Plus, Bubba, I know we've got more great programming, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, we do. Tomorrow night we'll catch up with the chair, the ECU Board of Trustees, Scott Shook. Obviously, we'll talk about Coach Houston's extension that was announced in the last several days, and a lot of other topics with him. And then we'll also be catching up with Boston College football play-by-play voice. And we'll have a lot of other content headed your way as we prepare for the East Carolina-Boston College Military Bowl matchup on December 27th.
No doubt. That's Thursday night, right?
Yes. If I said tomorrow, I meant Thursday. And tomorrow night, we have Pete Medhurst. I mixed the two up.
That's all right. The one thing you count on is we have a lot of great content. Maybe not daily, but most of the time it's a lot of time, especially during football and basketball season, and then basketball and baseball when they overlap. It's a lot of content as we're very busy. All right. I want to thank Coach Jags. Thanks to Kyle Barber. Thanks, Bubba, so much. Appreciate you, man, for all that you do for the show behind the scenes and on air. And we'll see you after the game. Enjoy Pirates. versus the Aggies tonight. That's Williams Arena, Minji's Coliseum. And, of course, our good friend Cy Seymour and Patrick Johnson on the TV call on ESPN+. And, of course, our good friend, going back all the way to 96, Jeff Charles. I've known him for a long time, the voice of the Pirates, along with former assistant coach and interim coach a few years ago, Michael Perry. So join them on the radio side of things. All right, so we'll see you after the game. Until next time, you've been watching the Sports Objective and listen to it here. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.